Good morning. Hey, everybody. What's going on?
Yeah, we
have. Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys are so impressive. You guys skipped the bar last night. Wait, wait, wait. Some of you came directly from the bar, huh?
Yeah, we can smell you.
Yeah. Seriously, I am so impressed. This group came like first thing in the morning, 9:30. Wow. Thank you so much. Yeah. Hey, it's Steve Hall. Hey, we wanted to poll the audience and find out who you guys are. And let's start with types of companies. Who's from a small company, maybe a startup or a smaller agency? Okay.
Okay.
About, I'd say, about a third of the room, huh?
Yep.
And how many are from larger companies?
Good.
Okay, so about half, would you say, Katie? Yeah?
Yeah, a little more.
And how many folks are, let's say, in an analytics type of role, a measurement role? 20, I guess.
Are you happy in your jobs? Do you want to come work for me?
And how many folks are in a maybe broader marketing role?
Marketing?
Okay, about a third, maybe more, maybe half.
Anyone here for nonprofits?
Yeah.
All right. It's about 20
folks. I smell a new book.
How many?
Wayne to the press, yes.
You're on. Yeah, how many work in or around customer service, customer care, operations, that side of the house?
Okay. There you go.
How many aren't sure why you're here? Okay. I love these honest people. I love these honest people. And who do we miss? Who else wants a shout out? Where are you from?
I got another one. Boxers, briefs.
Paper.
Thong. Any thongs? Got thongs? You don't have to answer that. Lisa is appalled at her panel already.
How many have your Pinterest strategy all nailed down?
No, it's pinned down.
Pinned down.
Oh.
Oh, come on.
Are there more?
You kick the door open and don't expect me to walk through that. Come on. Really?
The question is, can you make more puns from Pinterest or Jeremy Lin?
Well, I mean,
Linterest.
That's pretty, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Oh. I'm going to leave all that up to Jeremiah because I know I'll cross a line somewhere that will not will not be appropriate. Speaking of puns, porn is in the title of this, so yes. We could have some fun this morning.
I think that's how we got selected.
This will be great.
That has a lot.
That's
to do
why
with
they all showed up.
Did y'all? Is anybody here thinking they were going to see porn? All right, we got a laptop up here. We got Wi-Fi. We'll figure it out. I don't care about the terms of service. I never read them anyway. Yes, depends on who you're with and how much you've had to drink. Last year, before the panel, like the lady that brought me in from South By said, "You're not allowed to talk before we tell you to." They didn't do that this year because the first thing I told them last year was like a string of explicatives. I was like, they said I couldn't talk, so I'm just going to swear.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason, you got a seat over here, dude.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Morning. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Where are you from?
Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, how many people here are following Jason?
What? Why in the
and
hell?
And how many people here are following Katie?
Katie Payne.
And measurement. How many people are following Jeremiah?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And how many are following Dave?
So the other
Dave.
Two must be following me.
Super Dave. Awesomeness. Is somebody supposed to tell us when to go? 8 more minutes.
All right.
All right.
I know. Everybody's here and prepared and ready to go. We could do Q&A first, I guess.
We could.
Let's do Q&A first.
Actually, that would be a good idea. Ask people what they want to learn about.
Yeah, what would you like? What does everyone want to know? Questions?
You got a timer.
What does everybody want to know about?
Stopwatch.
What do they want?
I don't have
So what does everybody want? And you can tweet to NetBase Nose to the hashtag.
Yeah, hashtag NetBase Nose.
Something really interesting with that. So post so what you want.
Think about what you want, and you need to make it interesting. If it's interesting, you could win something really cool. And it's going to be completely arbitrary. It's not a sweepstakes. We're not going to read terms of service to you. And it's not porn.
It could be.
Some people might consider it porn, but it's not. It's a totally appropriate porn, if there is a such thing.
It's a potential accessory.
Oh, it's definitely an accessory. You're going to need penicillin, though, if you use it as an accessory.
Actually, there was a typo in the title. It's not porn, it's prawn.
No, it's corn.
Sorry, where are my Iowa friends?
That's
got
the
corn?
That's in light of the Iowa caucuses.
So who's using some of the location social networks? Anybody? Right. Let's see. Raise a hand. Anybody using Foursquare this here in South By? Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. It's about 2/3 of the room. How about Highlight?
Highlight.
How about Glancy?
Yeah.
Lot less hands. How about Echo?
Banjo? Anybody using Banjo? Yeah, we got some Banjo fans.
Only
here.
About five. So it looks like Foursquare is dominant. I saw Highlight. What else did we miss?
How many people cried yesterday because Gowalla shut down? Couple, yeah.
How many people have no batteries in their cell phone after using all those apps? Yeah.
How many people have spare batteries for their cell phones in their backpack?
How many people traded beers for a power charger?
That's smart. Hey, we came up with a really cool, a couple of my friends from Kentucky, because we're from Kentucky and we have license to do this. We come up with a new startup every year at South By, and our startup this year is Chafe and Charge. And it's a device that you put between your thighs so that while you're walking down the street, South By charges your cell phone. We figure we got a really good ripe audience with fat people, so that'll be hitting the market soon.
That's not true. Just the skinny ones got to walk faster. Hey, do you guys know about Katie and the tiara? Let me sing your praises.
She's the queen.
So Katie has been in the social media ROI space before Mark Zuckerberg's parents met. No, but truly, she's written books. She's had the predominant blog when I was working at Hitachi in corporate running social. I would read her stuff and listen to her. And so we have anointed her with this tiara, the queen of measurement. And if you get to come up and meet her afterwards, you'll see that it's actually comprised of
tape measures.
Very clever.
I did it for South By 2 years ago. I've never been able to get the tape measures out, so it's like the permanent measurement.
Unfortunately for the guys, all we got was thongs with tape measures. And
that's where the chafing idea came from.
Do you guys see the guy in the thong?
That's my boy Aaron from the Stash Act, the dude with the Borat thong running around yesterday or the day before. You heard of the Stash Act? It's the American Mustache Institute is marching on Washington on April 1st to get a $285 tax credit for mustached Americans. I'm one. But here's the cool thing. H&R Block is supporting it, and if you sign the petition, H&R Block donates money to a charity that provides fresh drinking water to people around the world who don't have it. So there's a nice little charitable angle. It's a lot of silly fun, and it pisses off Congress. So rock and roll.
And it also is gender neutral, right?
It is gender neutral. If you are a female and you have a mustache, you get the tax credit.
I heard the hashtag is Occupy Lip.
That would be Lip Sanity.
No. The panel isn't having started yet. You guys having fun yet?
Out of control. Too early in the morning.
We have 3 minutes to go.
3 minutes. Oh, I can fill 3 minutes.
I'm filling it with telling people what I want.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Katie's tweeting what she wants. Yeah,
let's read off some of the tags.
Yeah. It's what? NetBase knows? Yeah, NetBase knows right there. It's on the screen. If you can read, there you go.
NetBase knows. What do you want?
What do you want?
Tweet.
Could
I
be
want.
Anything. No, you don't have to have a filter or context. Just what do you want? And we're going to show you in real time what people are talking about online about what they want a little bit later on, which is cool. Anybody in here actually use NetBase? Are you a current customer? Any current customers in the room? Got a few? Okay, cool. Yeah.
Where are you guys from?
Sync Research.
Love you guys.
Like SYNC Research?
Yes.
Oh, Seek. S-E-E-K. Okay, very cool.
They found some really cool things.
That's nice. That's nice. Very nice. You could. We need more people sitting in the floor because that makes the panel ultimately cool. Even more cool.
We have some people on the
floor. Yeah, we got some people on the floor up here. Yeah, there's still a couple seats for anybody who comes in. There's some over here, too. So if you guys in the back standing up, there's some seats throughout. Now, the seats throughout might be because the person sitting next to them did just come from the bar and doesn't smell good. But you can
who's here from Texas? Our hosts.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Dave here next to me is from Texas.
Yep.
I heard Texas right is so big that the tweets are 280 characters. Right? It's true.
Don't quit your day job.
All right.
Anybody here from Kentucky? Yeah. Used to be. Used to did.
Anybody here from New England?
Yeah.
All right. How about California?
Bay Area.
There we go.
Yeah, little known fact, Katie and I went to the same elementary and high school in New Hampshire.
How about that?
Right. Well, wow. Actually, I didn't know that.
I actually never really went through.
Yeah. Yeah, Oyster River.
I actually didn't go.
Hung out. There we go.
I dated everybody at Oyster.
Wow.
She said it.
Right, elementary school, exactly. The tiara.
There's a lot more to that queen title, apparently.
Okay, well, it is 9:30, so I think we can go ahead and officially get started. My name is Lisa Joy, and I am the CMO of NetBase. And what I want is for everyone here to have an absolutely fabulous time and to learn a lot, too. So the panel has already gotten started, but I thought we'd start by just having the panel tell you a little bit about who they are and what they want. So let's start with Dave. Dave,
sure.
Who are you and what do you want?
Dave Evans, Vice President and co-founder of Social Dynamics. And I want, as an Austin resident, I want 25,000 people to come back to my city again next year. Thank you for coming.
Someone tweet that. Jeremiah, who are you? What do you want?
I'm Jeremiah Aoyang. I'm one of the industry analysts at Altimeter Group. And I would like another vacation on a beach.
Okay. Katie Payne.
I'm Katie Payne. I run a company called Katie Payne & Partners that does measurement consulting for folks. And I want everybody to do measurement right. And I want to write a novel.
Nice.
I'm tired of writing about facts.
Mr. Jason Falls, who are you and what do you want?
What do I want? You woke me up at 7 o'clock after being at South By for 4 days. I want to punch you in the throat. I want to set every cab in Austin on fire for leaving me hanging this morning.
Yep.
I want to move to Belize to get away from American politics. I want my daughter to clean up after herself. I want an electric-powered, eco-friendly, big-ass truck. I want a year's supply of Reese cups. I want businesses to realize that Facebook is not the answer. I want people to stop auto posting their tweets on LinkedIn. I want homelessness and poverty to end, and I want a date with Elizabeth Shue.
Is that it?
Is that enough?
Did everyone get that?
There you go. Pick your favorite and tweet that. That'd be great.
And as our panelists said, if you could all tweet what you want, at the very end of the session, we're going to pick at random our favorite tweet and give you what women want for a whole year. So if you could do that tweet to, yes?
Do we know the Wi-Fi?
Hotel. Intercontinental Hotel. Tweet it to NetBase Knows.
Passwords hotel lowercase, in case anybody in the back didn't hear that.
So we're going to be talking about how social media comes of age and how it's coming of age. But first we want to talk about what women want. So by show of hands, who here thinks they know what women want?
Careful, guys. Careful. Careful.
Okay. So what we did is we looked at a whole year's worth of social media chatter and sorted it by what people saying, I want, and parsed it by male and female. So I'm now going to share with you the number one thing that women say they want. Ice cream.
Yeah.
So now you know what the prize is. But it's not just ice cream. We also then looked at what brands are they talking about the most. And we also looked at which ones they say they love. So what you're looking at here, I don't know if you can see it, it's quite small. And actually, I've blogged about it this morning, and you'll be able to find this. It's a very long infographic with all the brands and all of the data that we found in this analysis. But the brand that's the most spoken about is actually Dairy Queen. 41% of the chatter about ice cream is about Dairy Queen. But there's some other really interesting insights there. First of all, there was this whole category of women saying that they love ice cream more than sex. And here's an actual verbatim. And then hailing from Central Texas, I know we have a lot of Texans here, our very own Bluebell was the most loved.
Yeah.
There is a lot of brand passion for Bluebell. There's also a lot of brand passion, but with negative sentiment, for Walmart. And I didn't even know Walmart had ice cream. And then the other big who knew that we found is that Starbucks made the top 10 list, and it was the most passionately spoken about ice cream. I didn't even know Starbucks had ice cream. How many people here knew Starbucks had ice cream?
It's great.
Is it good?
Apparently you buy it in the store, not in Starbucks.
The coffee is to die for.
And then when we looked at the flavor debate, we just thought that people would say that chocolate was their favorite, but it turns out very close, neck and neck, 29% chocolate, 35% vanilla, and 36%, a smattering of all the other flavors. So I said we parsed it by male and female. This is actually the top 10 list of the top 10 things that men and women over a year's time said, I want. And it's quite fascinating. I'm hoping you can read it. The top three things that men and women want are actually the same, but in different order. Ice cream, pizza, and car. There's a 70% overlap. And of the three things, the 30% that's different, they're actually very similar. There's a drink. Men want beer, and women want coffee. There's a treat. Men want bacon, and women want chocolate. And then there's a meal. Women want sushi, and men want chicken. And then we looked at all the brands. So we did this really deep analysis. So we really do have a lot in common. And this is just a little taste of the types of insights that you can find when you intelligently analyze social media. So that brings me to the first question for the panel. When we're thinking about social intelligence, which is one of the indicators that social media is, in fact, coming of age, and we'll be talking about this throughout the whole day, but I don't know, Jason, let's start with you. How should companies use social intelligence and this kind of data?
Well, I think this kind of data, I like it because there's not been an effective strategy, marketing communication strategy in the world that wasn't predicated on some sort of understanding of the audience and what the audience wants. Even if it was just, the marketing director or the CEO of a company anecdotally thinking, well, I assume that my audience wants X and they got lucky. It always is formulated on some sort of basis of what the audience wants. The reason that social intelligence, I think, is in some ways, not always, more insightful and more important today than even traditional market research is because you have to remember that social data is people saying things online. They don't know they're being interviewed by some sort of surveyor, a marketing panelist, a market research company. So that unbiases the data to a degree. Not completely unbiases it, but when you know you're being interviewed in a mall with a person with a clipboard, you're answering your questions more carefully than you would if you're just going onto Facebook and saying, I hate my bank, I love ice cream, whatever. And so it's really unfiltered and unbiased, and in many ways it's a much larger sample size that you can get from other research sources. So I think social intelligence is imperative for companies to understand because it gives you an unfiltered look at what your audience is really talking about, what they want, what they need.
So Measurement Queen, how should companies be using this kind of data?
I think they need to first be aware that their customers and their stakeholders are actually there and actually expressing things. Because I think one of the challenges is that not everybody sells ice cream or something on the retail basis. And so if you're Raytheon or you're Lockheed or you're a complicated B2B company, people aren't going to get passionate about your spectrometer. They're not going to say, I love this, right? On the other hand, that doesn't say you shouldn't use social media to perhaps try to elicit more customer response or try to create a community among your customers. The point is the fact that it should be driven by your customers, not the tool or the platform or how easy it is to measure the results. I think companies that are really doing this well, both on the B2B side and on the consumer side, are doing it because they've figured out how to attach the customers to what they need to know. And it may be in customer service, it may be in product development, it may be in IR, it may be in human resources, but it's not specific to any one function.
Jeremiah, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, this is a really fascinating question. And from an industry analyst perspective, I want to go up a level. Have we really thought about how big of a change this is to the research space? And I come from a research background, former forestry analyst, but think about how much money can be shifted from traditional types of surveys to now this open ethnographic research that's just available right now. I mean, even the Twitter stream, the APIs, you can pull all this data. So this is at a broad level, a fundamental, large change on how we can understand customers. It's important we tap into it. Now, when we get back into the programs and how companies should use this, this is an important arsenal in our overall market research perspective. We also need to look, in addition to social discussions, is their behaviors. You know, they may say they want a car and pizza, but did they actually go do it? So this needs to tie back to behaviors. And then the last part of this is, how has this actually influenced other people? So if they talk about it, did it influence others around them? And that's a big part of social, is a community effect, a network effect, or a viral loop. So as they say, I did get the best best ice cream. What's it called? Bluebell?
Mm-hmm.
Bluebell. Did it influence others around you to also get that? And I think that's the real opportunity this has. Dave?
Yeah, so I'll take off on that, and I want to go a little different direction. You talked about the research and the impact of research and so on. One of the things that's clear in this data, right? So men and women want sort of the same things as after a study, and you think, well, actually, wouldn't they want different things, right? They're really not the same thing. When you dig into this, what you sort of discover is this is a way of understanding what an individual person is saying to your company, which is very different than what traditional research tells you, right? And when you start to understand what an individual person is loving, hating, wanting, you know, et cetera, it gives you this opportunity, and I know we're going to talk more about this, it gives you this opportunity to start that person up this engagement ladder, up this path toward being a true brand advocate. Think about the role that customer care plays versus, say, advertising. I mean, pre-sales, we've got one or two contact points. Post-sale, we've got renewals, subscriptions, hardware upgrades, all kinds of opportunities. Problems come up. We have all kinds of places to contact an individual customer and move that customer from, I like this brand, I'm part of it, to I love this brand. Even when there's a problem, we can convert that person to I love this brand. If you can do that, the social web and this kind of insight becomes a very different place, because it becomes this huge amplifier for your advertising and other programs. So I'll end on that. I know we're going to come back to this.
So while the top 10 things were the same, so we found the top 10 things, then we assessed the top 10 brands for each category, the top 10 brands that men talk about for ice cream, the top 10 that women talk about, and then we mapped them by three metrics, by buzz, by sentiment, and by passion. The passion score, the language, the emotion that's used in describing these different brands. And we found something really interesting, that even though men and women want the same things, the way that they interact in the social sphere is very different. And we netted it out to the fact that women gush and men talk. In fact, they talk a lot. In fact, we've been tracking South By, and 62% of the chatter is coming from men right now. So women gush. They use the, you know, OMG, I can't live without, I adore, I must have. Whereas men are like, yeah, I bought a Ferrari. But when they bought the Ferrari, they talk about it. But not, you know, they don't gush. Women gush. 72% of the top most talked about brands were women just gushing. But then 68% of the most talked about brands were men talking. They're talking a lot. So I go back to the panel and ask, so if we're talking about the same thing, but we're talking about it really differently, you know, as a brand manager, as a CMO, what does this mean for my business? How does the fact that we talk very differently affect the way that we communicate with and engage our customers across the enterprise? So I'm going to start with Jeremiah because he's raising his hand.
Oh, gosh, that's an awesome one. I mean, there's so many ways to cut it. CPG makes a lot of sense to cut it by gender, right? But, I mean, we could also cut it by title, maybe, yep. Lisa. We could do it by region. There's so many ways we can cut it. But let's just stick with the gender one. I think that is interesting. So if I was sitting with maybe a marketing strategist, I would think about if women are gushing and they're giving a lot of emotion, maybe that's a great time to dial that up right towards the point of consideration in the marketing funnel. Just getting that real emotive change. Now, if men are just talking about the product, maybe it's like support about the product or how to use that, then you might want to encourage them to be involved in the community support forums or filling out different content. But I think there's also an interesting one around personalizing content if you can figure out who's on your site. And one of the ways that we're seeing companies do that is with social sign-ons. You guys know what I'm talking about? Facebook Connect, eventually Twitter Connect, LinkedIn Connect. And then if you could figure out how to use that and determine which gender is on your site, then you could actually change the content in time instantly. And we call that social context. Mm-hmm. Social context. And imagine if all of the content on your website rendered based upon the gender preferences.
Yeah, this becomes really important in building advocacy. How many people here use Boingo or know Boingo?
I know Boingo.
Good. So if you go to the Boingo site, I'm listed as a super fan, right? One of the super fans on the site. And the way that came about was my experience with Boingo as just an ordinary user. I'd been using a competing service. I switched to Boingo. Thought, you know, I'll give this a try. This was a few years ago. And then I had a couple of experiences where, you know, in one case I was in an airport, and you know, if you're using Boingo and you're in an airport and you have some kind of an issue, and you tweet to Boingo, if you know Baoshi Nguyen, she's done an amazing job in building their social response team. You've only got a matter of minutes to get a response back from Boingo. Otherwise, Boingo has missed the opportunity for you to use their service. Right, I mean, you're sitting there for 45 minutes. If they take an hour to get back to you, you're in the air on the way to the next city, and they have lost that opportunity, right, and left you dissatisfied. I had a couple of experiences like that where they were back to me literally within minutes. And again, I'm just a no-name user, new user of their service, right? That kind of thing translated into how they began talking to me and recognizing, here's somebody that knows how to run a test and do a couple of things, and if he posts to us, we can get an answer to him, and he'll get some facts back to us pretty quickly, because chances are, if there's something happening to this guy in the airport, there's something happening to 10 people around him in the airport too. So why not use this guy to start to solve these problems, right? So by understanding how different people talk and how they want to be communicated with, and again, it gets back to this sort of scale issue and this responsiveness to individuals. It's very difficult to do. If you can do that, you can actually begin to build advocates and build relationships at a very fundamental level and then move people toward this fan status, toward super fan status.
And Dave's talking on a pretty granular level there, but I think we all, especially for those of you who are at medium or small businesses, we need to pull back a little bit and kind of revisit what Jeremiah started out talking about. Think about the ability to deliver a more relevant marketing message to your audience. If you can hit the relevancy bullseye, which I like to say is the right message to the right audience at the right time in the right location, you have a much better chance of converting that person to a sign-up form, to a purchase, to becoming an advocate. And we can start to do this with our websites now. And to kind of break it down, Jeremiah broke it down by gender. I'd like to break it down by geography just so you can get another sort of, you know, feel for what this looks like. Because if I am selling parking spaces in a parking building and I am in Jeremiah's part of the world in California, my messaging might be, and this is sort of a superficial way to look at it, but my messaging might be, dude, come park your car here.
Yeah, totally, and, man.
And if I'm in Katie's part of the world, I'm going to say, hey, come park your car here. And if I'm where Dave or where I live, I'm going to say, put it over there, man, you know? So, and that's a simple way of looking at it, but if you can deliver a more relevant message based on gender, based on geography, based on age, based on social profile and what these people are saying online, at least at a wide level, at a scale level, you can be somewhat more relevant. Now, what Dave's talking to is a little bit more granular, but at the same time, we've got to move toward that.
There's one thing you missed, though. I like everything you said, Jason, but also factoring in who said it. The source, right? That's important. Social.
We're going to get to that.
Oh, okay. Quiet, Jeremiah.
Okay. Well,
I disagree with you because, first of all, I hate being seen as a woman out there who's just categorized. Nobody likes being considered a target audience. They like being considered me, Katie Payne, and the context has to be around not whether I'm in. If my handle says I'm in New Hampshire and I'm actually on a beach in Hawaii, I really don't care about parking a car. You've got to look at it as you have individual relationships with people. And yes, from the mass market, you know, CPG standpoint, everybody goes, hey, you can't do this. In reality, that's what really good nonprofits are doing. It's what the really good B2B folks are doing. They are looking at customers as individuals. They are talking to them as sane individuals, and they're building relationships towards a goal. And the goal is not always to sell something. It may be to mitigate a problem, to mitigate risk, to put stuff out there so that in the event of a crisis, you actually have some supporters out there. So I think that the notion that you can market to women, I have nothing in common with a hell of a lot of women. And
you're wearing a tiara with a tape measure in it.
Thank you very much. I mean, yeah, you know, and it's funny. I was talking to the lady who did No More Stockings, No More Nylons, and that is a wonderful idea. On the other hand, I know a lot of people who want to wear stockings because they want that kind of a job. So making these generalizations, I think, about gender or about anything else is very, very dangerous because you risk pissing a lot of people
off. I think it's more than that, Katie. I agree with you that every person is an individual. But I think that's the benefit that social data provides because whatever gender you are or even transgender or asexual, the social data can find out what do you want. Social data has this. Who are you? Where do you live? What do you want? Who do you know? What do you hate? What is your picture? There's so much other data that can target. And I think that the more specific thing is we can model specifically for a one-to-one engagement. What do you think?
Yes.
Yep, done.
Yeah.
There we go.
I have no faith whatsoever in most of the data, however. I've been doing this since, I've been doing social media since 1996, and the data has only gotten worse. So you're making huge assumptions that the data is correct, and I challenge you to look into any set of data and have it be anything more than 85% correct. So you could be right, you could be wrong.
Interesting.
There you go.
I like that.
Okay. Well, that was a great transition to the next question. So the question is, who is talking, and is what they're saying, is it really valid?
That you,
she so just said
I,
no.
Just said,
no, I mean, you get what you pay for.
So I think there's two types of data, right? So what do I want? That's how many of you want a car? How many of you are actually going to buy a car this week? Right. Peter is. So, I mean, it's aspirational. And I think aspirational is true. That I aspire, that I want that, I said that I want that, that's a true aspiration. And there is value in that data. Now, you do, secondly, have to mirror that with behavioral data. Did they actually go to the car dealership and actually test drive a car or sign up for the registration page on the .com? So I do think there is value in the data, even if it doesn't happen. Aspirational intent indicates what you want, and messaging can align towards that.
So how do you connect the two?
You use a combination of research tactics to look at what you're talking about in terms of looking at what people say is a perfectly valid way of looking at content and saying it's relevant. But what's very interesting is when you go back and you ask some of the same people, you know, why did they like something? Half the time they say, I like them. I don't remember liking them. And the other half of the time it's like, because I wanted the remuneration that they were offering. It's a free coupon. It's a free something or rather. I don't really like them, but, you know, hey, free is free.
Interesting.
So you have to look at the content. You have to look at what they do in terms of do they actually share, do they actually go online and buy stuff. And you also have to look at what they're saying. This is the thing that everybody seems to think, that social is a replacement for survey research data, and it's not. You still have to find out what's in their heads, because that's probably going to be a lot stronger driver than what you think they are talking about.
Yeah, I think you can also jump in at a more tactical level here. The Altimeter and USAF response matrix, if you're not familiar with that, check it out, because it's really useful. On this point of, you know, is what people are saying valid? If you can separate the people that are, you know, the comedians, the snarky comment and so on, that sort of thing, you know, what the question becomes in terms of validity is, number one, is this research data? Is this quality data? In a completely different way, you can look at this data and ask the same question, or look at this social media and look ask the same question and say, is it valid in the sense that it leads me to what I'm going to do as a brand right now? And understanding who's a brand attractor, who is leveraging your name to build their case. You don't do anything with that, right? Just leave it, right? Who's making the snarky comments? Okay, maybe you can engage. I just landed in Phoenix. Southwest lost my golf clubs. I love it when that happens. All right, there's the beginning of a customer response there, and Southwest can respond in character and actually take care of that person. A lot of those comments you sort of set aside. Then you get down to this core that is the legitimate issue that is correctly expressed, and that's absolutely valid, and you can pick that up and you can do something with that, right? And you can do something to help that person out and move them back into the I love this brand fold.
I want to throw one more thing out there too, because we're getting really deep into this discussion about analyzing online conversations, and there's an 850 million pound gorilla in the room that we have to throw in there that completely biases everything we're talking about, and that's the fact that the vast majority of Facebook conversations are non-indexable. We don't see them in any of these tools. They're not allowed. The monitoring services, the net bases, the other ones out there cannot get behind that privacy firewall. When you look at, and I'm doing some research right now about a couple of different industries and verticals, when you look at the sources of the conversations online, you have this very little sliver, maybe 6 or 8% is Facebook, and that's on the publicly available Facebook pages, which is not the majority of Facebook pages. You have a slightly larger sliver, maybe 8% Twitter. You have news sites and blogs and whatnot that are in there in varying degrees. And then you have the big, huge monster that nobody ever pays attention to, old school social media forums and message boards. That's where the vast majority of conversations online happen. So it's great to have these philosophical discussions, but when you're not looking at what could be up to probably 85 or 90% of all online conversations right now, if 850 million people are spending 6 hours a day on Facebook, you're not even looking at that data. So we're starting out way, way behind the curve on this, which I think leads to Katie's point that how can we trust this if we're not seeing it all?
And remember, the world is not on Facebook. I mean, there's a lot more people in the world than 850 million. And Twitter is an even smaller thing. And there's data out there, and I haven't found the actual source of it, but you're sitting there saying, well, yeah, this is I'm going to do this and it's going to influence people. Well, 10% on average of what's on Facebook actually gets seen, if that, and yeah. Twitter's probably less. So be realistic about what you think you're doing.
Yeah, there's another quick, and I'll just throw this in here. If this is a small segment, consider the even smaller segment of the stuff that actually gets responded to. The majority of what gets posted to Facebook publicly and the majority of what gets directly transmitted to a brand on Twitter goes unanswered.
So I guess the first question, to summarize what the panelists have aptly brought up, is you need to first do research to find out
where your customers are online, and then you start to filter down.
Yep.
Exactly. And actually, Jeremiah, to the way you started this conversation is they, you know, tweet, but then they might behave a different way. Reminds me of one of our customer stories. One of our customers makes Greek yogurt, and they wanted to know what their top-selling flavor is. So they went into their traditional business intelligence system, tell me what my top-selling flavor is, and the top-selling flavor was vanilla. But then they went to social intelligence and said, which one of my flavors are people buzzing about? Well, the top-selling flavor, who can guess what it was? It was pineapple. So people are buzzing about pineapple, but they're buying vanilla. Why is that? Well, it turns out that that insight pinpointed a supply chain problem. There is limited production, limited channels of distribution. So you go to Trader Joe's, you get your pineapple Greek yogurt, you tweet about it, this is delicious, you know, I love it. And then you go back and it's not there because it's limited production. So you go to Safeway and it's not there, and you go to Whole Foods and you want your Greek yogurt, so you buy vanilla and a tin of Dole pineapple. You go home and you make your own pineapple Greek yogurt. So here's that insight of, you know, I love this, but no one's saying I can't find it. They go and they find the solution. But that insight then led someone to finding a supply chain problem and fixing it.
Make
so
more
you're right.
Pineapple.
There is you have to look at what people are saying and then what they're doing and connect the dots so that you can make an intelligent decision. So our next question, let's sort of conclude the wrap-up, and then we're going to take a lot of questions from the audience. So we've started out by saying that social media is coming of age. I don't think it has come yet, but it is definitely in the process of coming of age. So I'll ask all of you to talk about, first of all, what's driving it, and second of all, what's coming next? I mean, we have made a lot of progress. There is a long way to go. Jason, you want to start?
Sure. I think the thing that's driving social media is people. I mean, that's people created it. We're in an entertainment, black hole right now where there's just way too many damn options. And social media has not, and mind you, I don't think social media has replaced television or magazines or books or anything else, but it has certainly become the primary screen. It's become what consumers probably do while they're watching TV or while they're listening to the radio or while they're driving their car, which is really bad.
It's illegal.
But yeah, it's illegal in most states, I think. So, and it should be if it's not. But nonetheless, it's become the primary sort of entertainment option. It's the go-to option. I want to connect with others. I want to see what people are saying. I want to communicate and chat. And that's not because there's not better entertainment options out there. It's because there's too many entertainment options out there. You know, how many cable channels do you have, or how many satellite channels do you have? And then how many do you actually watch? The answer is probably going to be between 0 and 3 because there's just too many damn choices. So we say, you know what? There's nothing on TV. I can't find anything I like. I'm going to go chat with my friends. Or I'm going to leave the TV on and, you know, the ratings might get measured somewhere, but I'm also doing other things in my entertainment time. Social media is being driven by people and their lack of ability to make choices with their entertainment time. And I think it will always be driven by people. Social media marketing, from a brand perspective, from a company perspective, in my opinion, is being driven by brands and companies' stupidity to think that Facebook is the only place they need to go. As soon as brands and companies let go of the fact that they think they can talk to all 850 million people on Facebook and convert them into fans, then they'll actually start to accomplish something. Because Facebook is great, but how many people here really go to Facebook to engage with brands? None of you. You go to Facebook to see what your exes are up to.
That's not always true, James.
Actually, statistically, it's a very small people. It's like 16% actually go on to engage with brands. It's a very small number relative to what they do.
So, Jason.
So,
porn is not driving the coming of age.
No, porn is not driving social media's coming of age. Porn, that's the reason the title of the session was that way, which I think I may have contributed to writing the name of the title. Sorry.
Imagine that.
But the reason it is because you think about it. Almost every internet-based technology and advancement in the last 20 years has been driven by the porn industry. Video streaming, e-commerce. Even live chat, which is a little creepy. All of these things have been driven by the porn industry. social media, though, was not. And it makes a lot of sense because if you think about it, if you know someone is into porn, you don't want to shake their hand, right? So it's not an inherently social thing. You don't want it to be. And if you do, you're probably an outlier fringe person, and there's nothing wrong with that. Just saying you are. And so that's kind of where we came out. So porn is definitely not driving this. People are driving this, and they're, I think my personal belief is that it's our inability to make entertainment choices which is driving this, and I don't see that getting any better anytime soon.
So Dave?
Yeah, so I'll...
What do you think is driving?
I'll jump out, and I mean, it may be people, but it's people armed with these things, right? As I was walking around downtown yesterday, it struck me that, you know, South by Southwest at the Interactive Festival, now at upwards of 20,000 people, has become a little bit is this in control or not? But what I was really struck by was the number of people with this in one hand and sort of doing what this was. This entire event is now kind of self-organizing. Right. In other words, the role of these devices has fundamentally changed the way consumers interact with brands. And when it's this easy, I don't have to take time out of my day and find a number and call and wait and punt. When it's this easy to tell a brand what I think or what I want or what I need or what I love, my expectation, given that those same brands are willing to interrupt me at every other point in my life, on TV, on the radio, on the beach, something flies, you know, every point in your life you're interrupted. If I talk to a brand on this, I expect that brand to be paying attention to this, right? Mm-hmm. And what's driving this now is smartphone adoption. So you look at the U.S. and what, we're near saturation, basically, in the U.S.
73%, I think.
Yeah, on this kind of stuff. I spent about a year working in India. And there it's close, it's somewhere between 5 and 10% of real adoption. Well, there is a wave coming, and it is a big wave. And for brands that can't scale and so on and really pick up on these individual conversations, there's a major problem.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, broader perspective. Why is social media coming of age? And I love to talk with my colleague Brian Solis, and we talk about how it's really sociology and psychology is driving social media more than technology. This is a fundamental desire for all of us to fly into Austin and pay outrageous hotel rates. I mean, we all communicate all around online all year, right? But we still want to come together and connect with people and meet people and shake people's hands, even if you're in porn. And the thing is, we're social creatures. And we want to self-express. We want validation. I believe I read a study where those that post the most on Facebook, which are very insecure, they need validation from those around them. So there's some interesting things. Sociology, psychology, our desire to be as one, as a unit, as a group, part of a pack, that's what's driving this.
I agree. I think it's relationships. I think it's the need for more relationships than you can get, especially, you know, I come from New Hampshire. There's not a whole lot of people, I mean, in the neighborhood. I want other people who like things that I like, and I don't find them in my neighborhood, so therefore I find them in my social neighborhood. But I think that if we take a bigger perspective out here, I think that if you look at the Arab Spring and what's happened out there in terms of politics, I think it's coming of age because it's changing the world. And I think it's changing the world both in terms of raising money and solving social problems as well as changing, you know, regime changes around the world. And I think that that's why it was that fascinating conversation that I had with a telephone company in the Middle East, and they went from completely denying social media existed and they didn't want to have to deal with it to adopting it, implementing a social media strategy, measuring it, and doing all the rest of that stuff. And I said, you know, what was the cause of the change? And they said the Arab Spring. Because fundamentally, when you sit there and say, if you make people angry enough, you will be replaced, that applies to phone companies as well as dictators. And so I think that's why an awful lot of companies are paying attention today.
Interesting. So I almost brought a crystal ball with me to give to you, but... Who wants to start with what you think is coming next?
World peace. I'm serious. I think that what's going to happen is that because of the ability to, for at least for a short period of time, it won't last forever because somebody will figure out how to control it, but I think that what you're going to see is a lot of people joining social media groups to change their lives. Mm-hmm.
I think we actually are. I mean, somebody quick check this fact. Sometimes what I say is not exactly right. But I think actually for the first time in history, we live in a world where more countries are reasonably defined as democratic or something that looks like that versus autocratic. And I think that is a transformation. And so to your point, maybe it's on the way. We'll see.
Jeremiah, what's coming next?
In terms of social data, and I think that this all becomes integrated in the rest of communications that we have. So I think that, you know, I focus a lot on big companies and corporations. And I think just in a few years, new employees, when they're hired, they're going to be given just a few things. One of them will be a smart mobile device. Secondly is an email account. And three is a set of social media keys. And that'll be it. Have fun. And you run with that. And all of these things plug into your systems as you move about the company. And I think this will be just come a normal part of our communications.
Do you think that that our bosses, you know, our companies will control our Twitter handles? Or will those stay with us wherever we go?
That's a different topic. It depends on how you measure it. So we do measure those. And on average, most companies today, large companies with over 1,000 employees, have a whopping 178 business-related social media accounts. That includes blogs and forums, 178. And we also know within companies that the average amount of people that use those accounts is 1 out of 330. 1 out of 330 use those things. That's all Altimeter data. And that's just business-related accounts. That doesn't account for the personal accounts. So it depends on how you do this.
What about blogs? Can people, if an employee has an individual blog, can they take that with them? Or can, do they,
it varies.
Can they be told not to blog if they're working for a company?
Yes, absolutely. So I have a career blog, not a personal blog, not a job blog. So it comes with me from career to career. Unfortunately, at some of my prior employers, when you read the employment contract, and I bet you guys are in this and you don't even know it, that your employer owns all of your data. In fact, one of my recent employers, when I left, the legal counsel joined me at the exit interview and said, we own all of that content you created. And that would include my tweets and my Facebook photos and everything, because that's all IP related to the company. How many of you read your employment contracts carefully?
Okay.
Less than 15 hands. So you have to think about those things.
Jason, what's coming next?
I'm really kind of hoping for that date with Elizabeth Shue. I think, you know, I think the thing that's coming next from what I see, and keep in mind that I don't disagree with Jeremiah, but I also think that Jeremiah's purview is, you know, Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 companies, whereas mine might be a little bit bleeding down to the other 98% of the world, you know, medium and small businesses. And so I think what's next is that businesses like those are going to start becoming more educated. They're going to become better adopters of social media because they're not the sophisticated companies that work with the big research firms that have huge budgets. We are still in an era where most of the world doesn't know their ass from a hole in the ground in this space, not just in social media, but in the digital space at all. 44% of small businesses don't even have websites, people. So there's a long way to go. We live in a huge echo chamber, and we believe our own bullshit all the time. And the rest of the world goes on without us. And so that's why I try to concentrate a good portion of what I do on education and advocacy and evangelism for social media, because as we all know, it can change the world. It can change our businesses. It can change our bottom lines. But the vast majority of businesses out there are not innovative. They're not sophisticated. They don't have policies. And so I think what's next is we just slowly, gradually continue to grow.
And I'm going to add one other caveat. What's coming next is the lawyers. Relative to what you said, a couple of conversations I've had, relative to what some media outlets are doing to sue lots of people for repurposing content, I think you're going to have this wave. I don't know how we're going to fight it back. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All of this legal restrictions on social media is a huge threat.
Yep.
Okay. So we are going to go find out. We're going to go to Q&A. We have such a great panel. We really wanted to keep this super interactive. But first we want to go see what people at South By want. Hold on. Elliot, I might need your help refreshing the screen.
There it is. It just refreshed.
Cutting off the edge of...
There you go.
There we go.
Naps.
Who's Olga Snacker? What is that?
There's some crazy stuff on there. Oh my. Upper right men, wow.
Men want romance? Are you kidding me?
Men want spam bots.
Men want spam bots. Strippers, I get.
Okay. And we do have a winner for a year's worth of What Women Want for the most creative tweet. Ann Thaxton, will you please stand up? I'm going to read your tweet, though.
Me too.
Okay, I want to be able to drink all the beer, eat all the cinnamon rolls and cupcakes that I want, and not have a muffin top ever.
Yes!
So, Ed, you win 52 pints of Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Wow.
Should last you a week.
All right.
And we want to see you next year without the muffin top.
Yeah.
I think Ann just got like 200 Facebook friend requests from this room.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot of Ben and Jerry's.
So in the remaining 15 minutes, since we do have such a great panel, we wanted to open it up for Q&A. So if you're not too distracted by the updating, what people want. It's pretty funny.
Right here.
There are a lot of other more useful things that one can analyze. But first question.
On the topic of... what's next? I've noticed that there's been this revolution or starting through of niche social networks. I mean, Lady Gaga is trying to launch a social network of her own. And so with it being so mass and people liking that they're individuals and unique, do you see this trend of potentially more social networks that are niche and catered to very specific segments?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where super scalable.
Yeah, Dave, repeat the question.
So the question was, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit, but with the rise of niche social networks and just the number of people that are saying individual things and you know sort of finely granulated things, the social network that you cited and so on, celebrities that are creating their own, et cetera. What happens to us that are trying to follow this, use this stuff, to brands that are trying to work with this? And you really get to this issue of how fast can you scale from marketing social media systems, which are designed to collect, aggregate, and show you trends, into super scalable individual customer service or operations-oriented social media, where you're really noticing, number one, you're mining these individual communities, which is an issue of its own, but you're mining these individual communities. And second, you're actually separating the noise from everything else, and the things that you need to respond to, you're responding in a timely way, however that community defines timely.
I'll give a quick response. So I think your question was around, will we see more niche social networks? And I think over time, no. Aside from specific countries in China and Japan where that might be the case. But it's hard to find a social network that's launching now that does not have social sign-on. In particular, like six out of seven of the location-based social networks are Facebook-dependent on logins. So I think they'll be sitting on top of existing ones. Yep. So the long term, we'll eventually have a single social profile, whether you like it or not. Google and Facebook, whoever cracks that nut first is going to make trillion dollars. So therefore, we'll see these IDs come together.
So I have a question, since about 85% of the information is accurate and the rest of it's not. On research side, do you ever do research based on financial, kind of like where someone's financial status is? Because rather than asking them a question face-to-face saying, what's your income, you can follow, say, I just bought a car and it's a Geo, I just bought a car and it's a Geo, or I just bought a car and it's a Lexus. And you're going to eventually be able to distinguish.
Trust me, the government is already doing that.
But it's business, because I would think that would be a way to really target what your prospective buyer is, rather than just what women want. What do women who have a lot of money and drive Lexuses want?
That is being done already. There's an awful lot of mining of social data around fraud and other things, and that's already well established. So there's no reason why brands can't do it too.
Yeah, it's very complex to do that, but Absolutely.
Well, I mean, you can find communities already where there's wealthy people. So LinkedIn, generally people have professional careers with college educations. And I've actually seen the data that LinkedIn has for their campaigns. They send it to me as an analyst. There's wealthy people in LinkedIn. And you can also find an Amex open forum, you know, small business owners. Mm-hmm. So there's already communities of very wealthy people. And you can definitely market against that.
Yep. Other questions? Well, we had one go up here.
Let's head up to the mics, folks.
Yeah, can I head up to the mics that way?
I know it's a little very narrow rows. And
well, and this is social, so tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah. Pop that Twitter handle.
Okay, I'm Michelle Falzon. I'm from Australia. I'm Michelle _Falzon for Twitter handles.
Cool.
Is anybody else as concerned or perturbed as I am that the top 10 things people want is like bacon and cookies and stuff?
Bacon pretty much rocks.
I want bacon, you know, right now.
So interestingly, when we did this, just for fun, we fielded a survey. We surveyed 1,000 men and 1,000 women, 18 to 75. And interestingly, the top 10 things were very similar, but extremely different. I mean, it was, I want money, I want a job, I want another job with a modifier in front of it that Jason might say, but I won't.
You want a bullshit job?
But they, you know, ice cream was on the list, but it was like 25. World peace was on the list, but it was not on the top 10. And what we found from comparing what people say they want when they're tweeting, you know, I'm hungry, I want ice cream. It's, you know, it's lunchtime, I want chicken, is very different from when you ask them. And the responses from social were more visceral.
Yeah.
And the responses from traditional were more heady. You know, I want a job, I want money, I want my children to be healthy.
It goes back to that point I made earlier of when you're looking at social data, social intelligence, you're looking at very unfiltered and to a degree less biased, because, again, you're not answering a question to someone with a clipboard in a mall or answering a telemarketer's, you know, phone call. So it changes the way you answer the question, and that just goes to prove that there is a difference.
But doesn't that actually mean that it's got a bias of its own? Because I mean, it's what you can put in 140 characters while you're, you know, walking between South by
sessions. But it's not just Twitter. I mean, the data that we analyzed was everything. I think Jason was talking about how a lot of the really interesting nuggets come from blogs and forums. Mm-hmm. So it's everything. It's not just Twitter and it's not just Facebook. It's all the conversations across the social web. So it's Yelp and it's commentary on YouTube and comments on news sites. But when we looked at literally the sentence, I want, when people talk about I want, it's usually, I mean, I was surprised that it was all food. It was 80% food except for phone and car, which again, in the social web, people are being more visceral. Right now, I'm hungry. I want sushi.
It's Pavlovian. Right? It's
but
not deep.
If you ask me in a survey, what do you want? Unless I was really, really hungry at the moment, I might not say sushi. I might say, you know, my kids to be healthy. Yeah.
Like somebody in this room right now is probably saying, I want a sweater.
Right? Yeah.
See? But you're not going to answer that on a survey because you're thinking more deeply about
it. And it's interesting because one of our big customers told me they use these kinds of insights for what they call occasion-based marketing. They look at the time of day. This word cloud looked completely different last night, and it looked completely different yesterday afternoon. Throughout the day, because, right, look, I want breakfast. It's not going to look like that 2 hours from now. And so occasion-based marketing is looking at what time of day do people say, I want a Snickers bar. Right. And that can help connect to what time of day do I tweet out a coupon for Snickers bars. Or when I'm doing my commercial for a Snickers bar, where do I set the commercial? Or, you know, I want a Snickers bar. It's 4:30. Let's create a 4:30 in the afternoon scene. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So there are lots of different types of insights that can be taken from even something like this when you look at the time of day and decide how do I pinpoint people.
My experience with Boingo that I talked about earlier was extremely localized time-wise, right? It's like I was essentially saying I want a connection, right? And I want it right now, right? And so this idea of this is in my hand, this is what I want right now, those results aren't surprising at all.
Yes, sir.
Kip Knight, I'm with Tom Vest Venture Capital. Each of the panelists, real quick, what's the biggest misperception that you think exists right now about social media? And what are you concerned about regarding that misperception?
I think for me, the biggest misperception that's out there from the business and the brand side is that it's cheap or it's free. And that's, I mean, that was the same misperception that we were talking about 2 years ago. And it's going to be the same thing again, to my point earlier, that most businesses just aren't into this. They just don't get it. They're afraid of it. And as they gradually get into it, they're going to start to realize that if you want someone smart to run your social media, you have to hire them, or you have to pay a consultant or an agency or someone to do that. Yes, you can sign up for a Facebook account for free. Yes, you can have a brand page on Facebook for free for now. But it's not free. You know, if you want someone smart to run it, it's going to cost you money. It would be the same as if, you know, you wanted to do some really, really good speech writing for your CEO 10 years ago, and you thought, well, all I got to have is, you know, a typewriter and some paper, or a word processor and a printer. Well, it's not, you know, it's not just going to cost that. It's going to cost the brain that you're going to put behind it to write those speeches. And so we have to make sure that as we evangelize, and when I say we, all of us in the little echo chamber that we've created over the last decade, when we evangelize to people who don't know any better, we have to make sure they understand it comes with a cost in money, it comes with a cost in human resources, it comes with a cost in time. And so that's the biggest one for me.
Okay.
I think for me, the biggest is that people think that social media is Facebook and or Twitter. And they don't understand that it's a whole bunch of other things that may be more important depending upon the brand or the product or the market you're in. And that if I put something out on Facebook, it's like advertising, and I count 850 million people to see it. And they have this expectation that they're doing social because they're doing that. And they're very disappointed for the most part.
Yep. Hey, Jeremiah?
I think our panelists wrapped it up pretty well, but I think the biggest fallacy is the word social even matters. Yeah. That's right. I don't think the word social matters, or at least in the future it should matter. So I think the term social business needs to go away. It just returns back to social, or social communications, or social networking. These are all things we've already done. So as soon as the word social goes away, the better off we're all going to be.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, no, I would take that one step further, and to me the biggest fallacy is that a social media expert exists.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I'm very, very, very sincere about that. I think if people in
she said, please don't tell my boss that.
if people in this room.
Well, wait, how many people here have the name social in your job title?
Yeah.
Well, Jeremiah.
About a third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if people in this room follow each other in your industries, follow people that you meet here, find the best practices, discuss those, share them, add to them, contribute, this room collectively will know more than it ever thought possible.
One more quick point before we go to the next question. Every time I talk to someone who claims to be a social media expert, I inevitably say, no, I don't want fries with that.
That's not nice.
Larry Levy from Opinions. My question to you guys is, if you take a look at this big hairy elephant in the room, which is ROI, I think in a way this is a huge limiter to a lot of adoption that may or may not be occurring. And, you know, we're going through various iterations of what do we mean by ROI. And I'd love to get your perspective on this.
Oh, let me get that.
We'll be here for the next 2 hours.
Say, we can, if you're not interested, we can all leave. Katie's going to be here talking about this for 45 minutes.
So the short answer is ROI is an accounting term, and very, very few people can accurately do that because they don't know what the investment is, nor do they actually quantify the return that they actually want. I think that most successful ROI programs are being measured today in terms of money saved, cost avoided, risk mitigation, things like that. Yes, you can kind of sort of put those numbers on it. Many better ways to show value, either in comparative costs or efficiencies, risk mitigation, other things like that. You can calculate all that stuff, but 90% of these people who want ROI, in order to get the ROI that they want, they have to do marketing mix modeling. And if they're, you know, paying $5,000 to, you know, monitor stuff and nothing to anybody else, they're not going to be doing marketing mix modeling. So it's a ROI is possible. If I hear anybody say that it's not, I yell at them. But in the reality, that's not what the value is, and it's not the best way to calculate the value.
So we have three more minutes, and okay. I want the other people who are standing to have a chance.
Well, while
to
they're coming up, I would add to, to what Katie said. With as social moves to operations, ROI will become much more obvious and absolutely demanded.
Thanks for a great panel. I really enjoyed it. I'm Rebecca Schoen. I'm the I'm the founder of a startup that looks at social media influencers. So my question is, given all your thoughts on how social media is going to evolve, what are your advice to marketers in taking advantage of the information that's out there? Obviously, a lot of it, I think, is just trying it and iterate and see what works. But, you know, other thoughts that you might have.
So mine is get familiar with the operations side of the business. Yeah. Right, that's where this is heading.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I think you got to stop thinking of this stuff as new media. It's only new if you've never had a conversation with your customer before. It's only new if you've never cared about relationships. If you don't care about relationships and you don't care about customers, then you probably shouldn't be in business. But if you are, you know, if you are a good, you know, customer-focused organization, you've been doing this stuff all along. It's just another way to do it.
On the new... The Interactive Festival is 17 years this year. Right, that's not new.
Yeah. Hi, JL Zeckler with Seek Research. We're users of NetBase. We love it. But as research consultants, how do you help your Fortune 100 or your clients, Jason, who, if you're not playing in that field, although you are, how do you help them understand what it means when we say what women want? That was really what women say they want in social media.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get Fortune 100 companies to get this?
I think you just got to keep, you know, beating them about the head and face with it. You have to contextualize everything you say. You have to say that, like you said, this is what women say they want on social media. But to Jeremiah's point, how does that connect with behavior? You know, to Dave's passion points, how does that filter into customer service and operations? To Katie's passion points, how do you measure that? How do you quantify it? How do you pull insights out of it? Especially large companies, they're going to have market research teams, or they're going to have market research consultants. They're going to have, you know, insights teams that look in traditional data for insights. So you've got to show them how they can get that out of social insights.
Okay.
Okay. So it's okay. Go ahead. One last minute.
I actually think that because social is in some ways much more measurable than some of the more traditional public relations types of functions, and as organizations buy into this from an organizational structure, it becomes part of the DNA, the measures are going to get better, and that's going to convince a lot of people that...
Okay, awesome. So in wrapping up, one quick question. Did I get what I want? Did everybody have fun and learn something this morning?
Yeah!
Right. So listen, we have out front, we've got Ice Cream Man, and we are happy to give everybody what women want. There's some ice cream right outside out front. You'll find Ice Cream Man with his NetBase push card. Thanks so much.
You guys rock.
Thanks to this panel.
Thank you.
Thank you.